we go with Jeremy Scott.
From the cold, dark depths of a secret dungeon somewhere deep in the remote Pacific Northwest, it is Thursday night on Into the Parabnormal, or if you're in Australia, it is Friday morning. Good to have you with us tonight, wherever you are listening, friends. It could be a possibility that wherever you are hearing the sound of my voice, that if you look up, there could be some space junk headed your way. It is a possibility at any time. We currently have a situation where I think we have an increase in the amount of space debris that is raining down on us. We at Parabnormal News have been reporting on some of this space junk that has managed to crash. For instance, in August, we reported on debris from a Chinese rocket that came down over the Indian Ocean and landed in Southeast Asia. There was also a metallic orb-like thing that came out of the sky in the Gulf of Mexico the very next night in the early part of August. And then we had a situation in July where there was debris from a SpaceX rocket that crashed on a farm in New South Wales. In addition to that, we had tracked some other objects and also reported on the formation of Space Delta 18 to track threats in orbit. This is the new focus of a unit within the United States Space Force that is tasked with identifying threats to our assets to provide critical intelligence on threat systems, foreign intentions, and activities in the space domain, primarily those that can damage satellites and other assets or anti-satellite weapons. Earlier in the year, we had reported on debris that sent crews scrambling up at the International Space Station. And there was this European satellite flowing through Earth's atmosphere, and that just narrowly avoided a collision with a random piece of space junk. That happening in July as well. The International Space Station dodging orbital debris from a Russian anti-satellite test in June of this past year. And we had also reported last year on debris from a Soviet-era satellite that was destroyed by Russia last fall. And I believe that was the event that set astronauts actually ducking for cover up at the International Space Station. There are some interesting notes, though, that have happened with the whole threat of space junk. The Biden administration recently unveiling a plan to control space debris, or at least to set some regulations for that. And so we'll see how that actually makes its way through Congress. And the FCC is weighing in on this as well. They say that new rules are needed to fix the growing space debris problem. They actually just said that back in August. And, of course, Orbital Prime is the Space Force agency that will actually attack some of this space debris by actually either recycling it or removing it. So I guess that will increase the odds that we're not going to be hit by some of this space junk, which I hope we can explore as well. And you may have heard about a mystery piece of space junk that was spotted crashing into the far side of the moon. That also happening earlier this year. It's been a crazy year as far as space junk, and that only actually probably scratches the surface, honest to say. tonight, it's Space Junkyard on Into the Paranormal. It seems like there is just a raining cascade of space debris that is coming down on us. And it's obviously risen to the level where the regulators say, hey, we need to do something about this. And with more countries getting involved in this, and by this I mean space exploration, ramping up their activities in orbit, I think that we can expect that more pieces of old rockets and satellites and whatever, debris of all kinds, might continue to rain down on us and could seemingly, I guess, do so at an increasing pace. My guest tonight on the program is Dr. Brad Tucker, an astrophysicist and cosmologist at the Research School of Astronomy and Astrophysics, Mount Stromlo Observatory, and the National Center for the Public Awareness of Science at the Australian National University. He received bachelor's degrees in physics, philosophy, and theology, and a PhD in astrophysics and cosmology. Currently leading programs using NASA's Kepler Space Telescope and TESS to understand why and how stars blow up. He's also building a network of ultraviolet telescopes in the upper atmosphere, currently involved in a search to find Planet 9, and as well as issues surrounding the mining of asteroids. I don't think that half hour is enough, but here we have him tonight, Dr. Brad Tucker, Into the Paranormal. Good to have you all the way from the land down under.
Yeah, look, where everything's upside down and it's daytime when it's nighttime. No, but it's a fun place to be. It's a fun place to work. And now lately has been the center of a lot of, as you said, these discussions with space junk, given that event back in July. I think it's an interesting time, as you said, just broadly in space. There's so much activity happening, which is great. But there's been a lot in the community who have always said, hey, you know, with all this activity, there's baggage that comes with it. Policies, regulation, and junk, and all of that what that means, that needs to be handled and mitigated. So it's kind of brought to the forefront what we've kind of been thinking all along was going to happen, and that is it may become a bigger and bigger issue.
So regulation, if that doesn't succeed, is there a next best thing, like ways to, say, reduce the impact that this stuff falls?
So, yeah, look, it is something that everyone wants to do well. Space is unique in that it affects every country and person equally, both positively and negatively. It's very different from land borders and those sorts of things or problems on the Earth. And so groups have been trying to find best practices of making materials so that when it does reenter the atmosphere, it does burn up completely. So we'll see. The first wooden satellites launched next year. Japan and Finland, I believe, are both building some because you kind of know what happens to wood when it burns. It burns. But also just policies for making sure you control your things. And this is kind of the key. Once something, you lose control over it, that means you have no more fuel on board to steer or correct its orbit. It becomes space junk. And whether it's in orbit, as you're talking about earlier, or coming back down to the Earth, that is a problem. So there's a huge effort now of groups trying to find ways to make sure they always have enough fuel on board so that they can deorbit it, ways to limit that impact, and then ways also just to either recycle or get rid of the stuff already up there, because that's another big problem. So it's a huge cross-spectrum of effort happening across lots of different parts of the space sector.
So do you think that it's overblown, that there are these efforts that are going on, such as Orbital Prime, such as Space Delta 18, that are going to be tasked with, seeking out this debris and, removing it from the atmosphere? Or is it needed?
I think it's drastically needed. In fact, one of the projects we've been going here at Mount Stromlo in Australia, outside Canberra, is we developed the first system to actually deorbit junk using a laser. So we can actually now deorbit very small bits of junk using photon pressure, the pressure or light particles from a giant laser. And because there are literally hundreds of thousands of medium-sized bits, there's tens of thousands of big bits and even more smaller bits in there, and they all pose a danger. Now, it's not the sort of thing that I would lose sleep over, you're going to get killed or injured. here on Earth. But it just goes to showing that the more that you see coming down to the surface, it is hundreds of times worse in space. When you have something traveling 17,000 miles an hour crashing into another thing traveling 17,000 miles an hour, the energy released is a lot, meaning they break apart, they shatter, things are destroyed. Astronauts, as you say, in the space station have to be prepared to evacuate. All those sorts of things come into play. So making sure that we deal with the problems in space is really the key. So it's great that so many different countries, companies as well, are making this effort, because there's removing, and there's also even the simple thing of tracking. There's so much stuff up there that tracking alone is a big task that a lot of groups are trying to do.
Interesting. So you bring up this laser. I'm interested in learning more about that. How far away can you do this from?
So we can find an object about 3,000 kilometers above the surface, down to about a centimeter. So that's kind of the scale of what you can do with this. That's first finding it. And then using it, so this only works on millimeter to centimeter size objects. It requires still a lot of energy to do this. And what you kind of do is just give it a little nudge. And in fact, it's kind of like water going down the drain. It's spinning and spinning and spinning. And so as it gets closer to the Earth's atmosphere, it gets closer and closer and closer. And so what you do is you kind of give this laser, give it a little nudge. So you move it and change the energy more into one direction. So instead of moving down and in and out, you kind of just move it actually straight up, meaning gravity can help pull it straight back down and help accelerate the process of burning up in the Earth's atmosphere. So for these very small bits, that's the real big priority, because the atmosphere ends up being a nice garbage disposal. But again, it only works for these really small bits. So the effort of applying it to larger bits and hopefully ideally, as you said, what Space Force is looking at and other groups have done this now in the UK have looked at this, is trying to recycle it some way. That is obviously the best way possible. But you can really only do that for the larger bits.
Sucking it in with a big vacuum or something?
So in fact, yeah, there a group in the University of Surrey actually deployed a net. And essentially, they harpooned this net out, grabbed around an old satellite, and then they wrenched it in. So it can work in orbit, or even simply what other groups are doing, Lockheed Martin has done this already, is just refueling satellites. That is actually the biggest key here, is once you run out of fuel to control your orbit, that's it. So by sending a satellite up, they've called it the Mission Extender Vehicle, it tops up the fuel for a satellite and it can extend it for years. And that is a big change, both in cost, effort, and the space junk problem.
Talk about what you recently discovered. I believe you were key in this whole find of late. These two recent discoveries, I believe, of space junk from a SpaceX rocket, right?
That's right. So on July 9th, it was a Saturday morning, 7 a.m., the trunk, so this is the bottom part of the capsule of the SpaceX Crew-1 capsule. So the Crew-1 was that first SpaceX mission that took astronauts up back in November 2020. And so, you know, they came back down in May 2021, but the trunk, and this is kind of the bottom unpressurized bit, had been orbiting the Earth. And so on this Saturday morning, over New South Wales, so the state where Sydney is, so this was kind of west and south of Sydney, this trunk re-entered. So lots of people heard the sonic boom. People even saw it re-entering and breaking apart. Then a couple of weeks later, I actually got a call from a couple of farmers, sheep farmers in the area, which happened to be about a few hours south of where I was, saying, hey, you know, we kind of found these things. We think maybe it's space junk. We're not quite sure. And I'm like, well, yeah, a lot of people think they find space junk. Usually it's something else. But they were near the flight path. We knew this thing happened. And they sent some photos. I'm like, that kind of looks like space junk. So I hopped in the car, went out the next day to check it out. And we were able to verify that these were the first two bits that have been recovered from that reentry of the SpaceX Crew-1 trunk. And one of the pieces was actually quite large. It weighed nearly 200 pounds, was almost 10 feet tall, speared into the ground. So it was a big piece.
What happened to it after you went there and investigated? Did it get further analysis?
Yeah, so essentially, you know, they just wanted to figure out, okay, is this real and what do we do? And there haven't been that many incidences well-documented of bits coming down and people able to find it. In fact, just the weekend after this whole, we discovered this, was that Chinese rocket booster coming over Malaysia. So I went and checked it out and said, yep, this kind of looks like space junk. We know you're very close to the flight path. So then we got in touch with the Australian Space Agency, because the way this works is it's actually an international process. It all goes back to the 70s when a few treaties were written that govern space. One of them that requires countries to return space property. Ultimately, this was during the Cold War when the US and Russia were worried that if something of theirs landed in another country, you could just claim, you know, hey, it's ours, right? You know, this happened with airplanes and stuff like that. They didn't want this to happen to astronauts even or spacecraft. So they said, you know, the official government body, which in Australia is the Australian Space Agency, has to work with the body that represents the country that we think it originates from, which in the case of the US is actually the FAA. Some people think it's NASA, but it's the FAA that kind of regulates this. Start that process, get onto SpaceX to confirm it. Luckily, one of the pieces had a part number. That always makes it nice in tracking it down. And get SpaceX to confirm it, which they did a few days later. And then eventually SpaceX came out to do a lot more detailed measurements and those sorts of things needed really for their modeling of space junk and help improve their knowledge of how these things come down.
There was a mystery earlier in the year with this rocket of some sort that crashed on the far side of the moon. It's the one I alluded to earlier. And at first, an astronomer said, hey, it definitely came from China. And then there was some speculation that it came from SpaceX, but quickly it reverted back to China. And of course, China tried to deflect blame. Do we know whose rocket that was?
Yeah, so that one we're talking about, the crater has now been found. In fact, it was found to be two craters side by side, which was quite interesting based on the angle it came from. Because you can imagine if it really almost skimmed the surface, you can imagine kind of hitting the surface and bouncing and creating a few craters. This appeared to hit more head on, which you'd expect just one larger crater. So we actually think this could be a good sign of deducing what the rocket was. And a lot of people in the community are fairly confident it did belong to China. But, you know, this highlights kind of the broader issue. You have to figure out whose junk it is. You have to be clear to pinpoint it is their junk. And, you know, there's not a giant beacon on the flag saying, hey, it's SpaceX or China's or whoever's. And then they also have to work and kind of, you know, own up to it. In the case of SpaceX, for this junk that we found in New South Wales, the SpaceX trunk was being tracked. It was a catalog piece of junk. People saw it break apart. It then broke apart. People saw it, and it had clear part numbers you can pinpoint to. In the case of the moon, it's very easy for China to deny it, because unless someone really goes there, finds the pieces and says, yeah, this is yours, it becomes a way of just saying, well, we don't think it's ours. And you kind of have to prove with, you know, beyond a reasonable doubt almost, that it is theirs. And, you know, in the case of the moon, okay, the far side of the moon, nothing really happened. But when then you talk about on Earth, what if the same thing happened on Earth? What if we didn't have a piece of junk that was cataloged that crashed in Australia or the US or Malaysia or anywhere else? And then trying to figure out, is it theirs? And then have the country actually kind of say, yes, it is ours. And then how do you enforce that? This becomes where regulation, law, and policies are really critical, because it's that acceptance and enforcement part that becomes beyond just everyone wants to be nice to, you need someone to actually deal with the problem.
So if you're going to deal with the problem, and we have an issue where countries aren't going to take, the blame for their own space junk, then how does regulation even work?
So I think it really, the onus has to be on the country itself to regulate it. And it's really more the broader calls. A lot of people in the community are saying we need to change how space is operated. In the past, it's purely been through the Committee for the Peaceful Uses of Outer Space, which is an office at the UN. and the UN Outer Space Affairs. And it's worked well now, but we're seeing a world where it's rapidly changing. As you said, even Vice President Harris just a couple of weeks ago in August said, we need to really take a hard look and overhaul the way we regulate space in the U.S. Because ultimately, you want to be a good partner, and you need to be a good partner, but you also need a way to enforce it. And with, you know, treaties aren't meant to be updated, right? You sign a treaty, and that's it. It's not meant to be updated every year based on new technology or who's doing what or where people want to do it. But that's where space is moving. The things we're doing now were dramatically far out of field 5 years ago or 10 years ago. And it's the same with what we're going to do in the next few years. And so I think a lot of people are pointing to, well, we maybe probably need to move to an oversight body that people accept, that represents not just countries, but the will of private companies as well, and those sorts of things. You know, you go back to the anti-satellite test that you topped at the top. You know, the U.S. did this first, and then China did, and the U.S. condemned China, and then India did it. So the U.S. and then China condemned India, saying, oh, that was bad. And then Russia did it. So the U.S., China, and India condemned Russia. Well, it's like, but you've already done it. You know, it's easy to condemn it when you've already done it. How do you stop it from happening into the future? And this is where we find ourselves in space. Is space equally affects everyone, but not everyone in space is equal. And so there needs to be a bigger push. And this is where we see these kind of coalitions forming between, for instance, activity on the moon, with the U.S. leading on the Artemis mission and having a number of countries, UK, France, Germany, Australia, signed on, and China and Russia kind of agreeing to work together on the moon. Where are we going to see a resurgence of almost space Cold War politics, something different, or is there a broader way of getting people to work together?
So this plan, the National Orbital Debris Implementation Plan that was released by the National Science and Technology Council in July, looks at basically three things. Those would be debris mitigation, tracking and characterization of debris, and remediation. What is the status of this? What is the goal of it?
So, you know, the goal is, as you said, it purely is threefold. You, firstly, you can't do the other two until you track it. And that seems really simple, but we can go back to airplanes, right? You know, when the world of aviation kind of came on in the teens and 20s, it was a free-for-all, and there was no standards or conventions. And it wasn't until the Chicago Convention that people created a standards of, you know, how do you communicate? How do you fly? How do you do your safety checks? All these little simple things that everyone agreed, all right, we just kind of need to do this. And it revolutionized airplane travel. And what is this trying to do is to say, well, we kind of need a similar thing. We need to all agree how we're going to track this. It's no good just to put something up and then you kind of quit tracking it. You need to be responsible or find someone to track it for you. And this is actually something Australia is doing a lot of. We are lucky in Australia where, you know, the size of the Australian continent is pretty much the size of the continental U.S., except it's a fraction of the people, which means there's a lot of land with no people on it. So it's very easy to put receivers to track space operations and satellites and the junk itself. And then how do you, once everyone's agreeing to track it or finds a way of tracking it, how do you limit that junk you're putting up? Either new materials, new ways of controlling it, and then cleaning it up. And so all are happening in parallel, but the tracking does everyone point to becoming the biggest issue right off the bat, because we are not slowing down in the number of satellites. About 5 years ago, there was around 4,000 satellites in orbit, both active and inactive. Right now, we're about 7,300 5 years later. So we're almost double in less than 6 years. And, you know, that number is not slowing down. It is rapidly increasing. So how do we deal with that aspect first foremost, and then deal with the material science aspect of better mitigation strategies and then the removal? So everyone's trying to find their own piece of the pie. And what that plan is to try and say, all right, well, A, let's not double up effort. B, let's make sure we're communicating and working together. And then C, how do we share resources so that everyone can benefit from when someone develops something.
Senator Marco Rubio is proposing the Deterring Errant Behavior Risking International Space, or Debris Act for short, which basically would impose sanctions on those other countries who don't control their space junk. Would sanctions even work?
Well, I think you kind of could. We've actually seen in some ways this play out in Russia right now with all the sanctions imposed on Russia due to the Ukraine invasion. A lot of the technology that they impose restrictions for due to the military immediately applied to the space sector, i.e. building missiles uses a lot of similar equipment to building rockets that launch satellites. And the Roscosmos, the Russian space agency, has been quite hammered in the past 6 months. It's maybe not as talked about as much, but it's been very noticeable in the space community that they have been quite affected by some of these sanctions. And so, you know, maybe there is. And, you know, you even think, well, maybe the U.S. and China don't really cooperate in space. There's still a lot of cooperation in these countries. For instance, when China landed their rover on the far side of the moon, there was some assistance from the U.S. When China landed their rover on Mars, the U.S. and NASA helped in terms of the communication and tracking. So there are a lot of strong ways based on the infrastructure you have that can really limit what a country could do fairly quickly and effectively. So I think the key would be, what are they imposing? But then it also then gets to the problem of, all right, well, maybe they're a private company in China or Iran or the U.S. How does those sanctions apply to a country versus a company, and how are those countries enforcing that company becomes another big key part of the puzzle. But something like that needs to happen. And I think there's a lot of calls from all around the world saying we really need to do this just cross spectrum. A lot of these ways of not just enforcement, but encouragement to better do better practices.
Interested in your thoughts on whether or not it's a legitimate threat we face with, you know, space junk actually causing serious damage on the ground or even worse.
Look, I think it's so far it's just been blind dumb luck that nothing has really gotten injured or hurt. And again, that's just a sheer volume that we're sending. The Earth is 70% ocean, so 70% of it's going to land in the ocean. And even more than that, most of the Earth is uninhabited. If you think about square footage, there's not a person covering every square foot of the land mass on Earth. But as we send all of this up, in fact, there was a recent study that came out a few months ago before the past couple of major incidences that you were quoting, of saying that in the next decade, people have calculated a 10% chance that someone actually will be killed by space junk. There are so many things that have gone up and so many things uncontrolled that have gone up that it takes time for all that stuff to come down. And we're going to start seeing huge volumes of it over the coming decade or so. And the problem also is most of it's contained to a certain chunk of the world. So between about 48, 49 degrees latitude north to about 38 degrees latitude south. So due to the kind of the inclinations the stuff orbits around, that's where the Earth was covered. Now, that's a huge chunk of the populated part of the Earth. And in fact, the mid-latitude, so kind of from about 10 degrees north, so just north of the equator to the south, is a higher risk than even other places. So there's some big cities that are even a higher risk in that 10% chance. So I do think we will see something like that. You don't like to be pessimistic, but it's kind of the realistic. I'm usually a very optimistic person, but I do think it will happen at some point. And hopefully that is not the catalyst to push people to change. And again, I wouldn't lose sleep over that. But just as we see with lots of human activity, the more we do of something without thinking of those ramifications, the more we have to deal with those ramifications down the road. And I think space junk is one of those cases.
Hey, give us a sense of like how much space junk we're dealing with. I mean, I've heard it broken down in like, you know, tons. It seems like it's exponentially increasing almost daily, I guess.
It is. I mean, there's on order of, So every day, roughly, there's about 200 tons worth of stuff that hit the Earth. Now, most of this is space rock, to be fair, but the fraction of space junk or human-made objects is rapidly increasing, and people think that in a few years' time, it could be on the order of 50 to 100 tons worth of human debris hitting the Earth every single day. That is a sheer large volume of stuff. The Chinese rocket booster that you said crashed over Malaysia a few months ago. Mm-hmm. Now, that was 23 tons alone, that single piece. The big piece that we found in New South Wales. So we're now at 7 pieces that have been found as part of this space junk event that happened in New South Wales in Australia, where that big piece weighed, yeah, over 200 pounds. If it hit someone or a sheep or a building, it would not be good. So, you know, luckily most of this stuff is small, but there's still some big chunks that come down.
Absolutely. Maybe millions of little tiny chunks a year may not make it to the ground, but may enter the atmosphere and burn up, safe to say.
Oh, very well. So, I mean, we kind of know, we can easily track bits based on their size. So U.S. Air Force or Space Force radar can track things 15 centimeters or more. And we know there's, I think it's about, the last count was about 27 or 28,000. It's on order of, you know, tens of thousands. The pieces a centimeter to 15 centimeters, we probably put at about 500,000. Pieces smaller than 500,000 or half a centimeter to a centimeter or on order of a couple of million alone in orbit. And so there will be bits of this coming down continuously. And this is the problem. It's not just recent times. There are bits from the Apollo era that will still be in space for another 100 years, maybe even 500 years. And this becomes that big problem. It's not just limiting the junk. That's a big issue. But then we have to deal with all the stuff still floating up there. That's going to be up there for a very, very long time. Yeah. And this is the inherent worry we have of this is, it's not a, hey, if we just stop doing this for 2 years, it will all go away. It's, if we stop doing this for 2 years, great. Now we just have to deal with all the stuff we've been doing for the past 70 years.
Dr. Brad Tucker, we are out of time, but give us a quick plug for some of the projects that you're working on. I know you've got a book, an online course, and other things coming up.
Yes, so we have a new online course that's about to roll out later this year. It'll be free online. They'll cover 4 different areas, space travel and exploration, including a lengthy discussion about space junk, stars and the sun, the solar system, and Aboriginal astronomy, so the astronomy of the first people in Australia. So we'll be covering that in detail. And we also, I have a book coming out on probably late next year on life in space, including how humans live in space.
Fantastic conversation tonight. Appreciate you coming on board.
Thanks. Take care.
Dr. Brad Tucker, you can find his YouTube channel. I'm Jeremy Scott from the cold, dark depths of a secret dungeon somewhere deep in the remote Pacific Northwest. Talk to you Saturday night.